from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 409, recorded live Thursday, January 30th, 2014. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Amelia Greenhall and Shanley Kane about the launch of their new media company, Model View Culture.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And on Skype right now, I've got Shanley Kane and Amelia Greenhall. And they've just started a new media company called Model View Culture. You can check it out at modelviewculture.com. Thanks, you all, for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. We're excited to be here. Thanks, Scott.
So why create a media company on diversity and technology?
Yeah, so when we looked at the tech media landscape in general, we noticed that there's a major market for a company that focuses more on the interests, achievement, and perspectives of diverse communities in tech, and that is able to take a critical stance towards issues with tech culture, produce social and cultural tech critique, and also explore the relationship between technology and social justice. So there's been a major uptick in activity in writing and community interest around these topics, but no tech media company that was focused specifically in those areas. So we really see this as serving a market that's currently underserved by the tech community today.
And it seems like this is more than just an issue of women in technology. I mean, you happen to be two women that have started it, but looking at your list of authors, you have a pretty diverse group. It doesn't appear that you are thinking about this in terms of women in tech, which would be just another, overly narrow view. Like in the sense of, there's a lot of tech writing around men in tech. They're not going out of their way to make it about men in tech. They're just kind of writing around about, you know what I mean? It's not like TechCrunch is, welcome to TechCrunch, white men in technology. But inevitably, that kind of is what happened. Are you writing about kind of the opposite of that? Are you trying to say this is about everything that is not white men in tech, or is it even broader?
So I think it's that there's just so much writing and organization and community coming together that we're seeing and we're part of, and then other satellite communities that we really appreciate their voices that we just aren't and haven't been seeing be published in the mainstream media. And so, we've been publishing short and long original pieces, like news pieces, columns, and all this stuff is covering just like issues that haven't been able to get out there or get covered in traditional media right now. Yeah, I think there's a lot of focus on women in tech right now, which is really great and really important. But ultimately, gender is only one aspect of diversity. Mm-hmm. You also have to look at gender identity and presentation, sexuality, race, ethnicity, disabilities, different aspects of the community, and not just focus on one specific group. So we're hoping to do that with our publication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, myself, I mean, I'm a generic cisgendered straight white guy, and as I have started to explore these other kind of either marginalized or smaller groups of people, I've gone to different hackathons that are focused on, black women hackathons, or there was one called Trans Hack for transgendered individuals. I find myself thinking, like, why is this needed? But when I go to these hackathons and these groups and these conferences, the people who are there are just so excited to be coding or hacking or talking to or presenting with people that are within their group, and they're just so jazzed about that. Why is that? Why are these things needed, and why are they so appreciated?
Well, I mean, speaking from personal experience, I got a degree in electrical engineering, and I was often the only woman in class, and it's just a constant feeling of being, you know, like a little bit like you don't belong, even if nothing overt is happening at the time. And there are also issues of safety, like physical safety, and like all of that just weighs on you as a, like a, you know, I am often harassed, like at most tech events, I would say, like pretty much everyone I go to, I get some form of mild harassment. And so when we're able to make our own groups that suit us and are specifically inclusive and for us, like just not having to like armor up or feel like that's an issue that we have to be thinking about, it like it's very freeing, and like it does feel really exciting.
That phrase that you just used, armor up, I think that's a really interesting one, because I think that's true. I think that the superpower that I get as a kind of a regular straight white guy is that I rarely have to armor up, and that is freeing in a background process that I'm not even realizing is happening. But I remember I was in Zimbabwe. My wife is from Zimbabwe, and when I'm walking around, I was walking around the streets of Bulawayo, which is a small town in Zimbabwe, and I wasn't really thinking about it, but I realized that I was tense, and I was trying to figure out, like, why am I so tense? Why am I so tense? And I looked around and I realized that I was the only white person probably within a couple of hundred kilometers. And my wife was really tense too. And I was like, why are you so tense? And she was like, well, you're here. Your presence is making me tense because we are now a unit and we are now a mixed couple in a city that doesn't like mixed couples. And we started to look around and we could just notice kind of the furtive glances and all of those kind of things. So we tried a couple of experiments where she would basically step away. She'd go a block away. And when she went a block away, she realized that everything changed. She became invisible because she looked like everyone else. And I became more tense because suddenly my advocate was gone. And we kind of explored these spaces, and we spent a month there. I mean, I lived for a month in Zimbabwe and realized that when you are the only something, the only whatever in a space, there's a background tension that is there all the time. And it's freeing when that goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the other aspect of that is by creating spaces that are focused on diverse communities and their needs, we're able to address problems and create solutions and build technology that there's really not a space for in the mainstream tech industry, or that the mainstream tech industry isn't focused on. So with TransHack, you know, building software and building technology that can improve the lives of trans people, and with women's hackathons and diversity-focused hackathons, building technology and resources that can really help our communities, that can address social and cultural issues in our community, and creating the space to do that. A lot of the mainstream tech industry is focused on like the next big social application, and is kind of out of touch with the needs of local communities and diverse communities. So we give ourselves a space to, make technology part of the solution in those spaces.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that these spaces, these kind of like subspaces or subgroups, are always going to be necessary? Or do you think that we're moving towards some utopic future where a regular run-of-the-mill tech conference would be safe for anyone?
You know, I think there will always be a need for, you know, smaller communities and to have groups with more affinities and more specific focuses. But it's obviously all of our sincere hope that more mainstream tech conferences and tech events and tech spaces can be more inclusive and can be more diverse. And there's a number of steps that people can take to help forward that. But I don't think it's an either or question. I think we really need both mainstream spaces and, you know, more private or smaller or local spaces.
Mm-hmm. Where do you all see the defensiveness come from? I think that when working with someone who's part of the majority system, other white men or other men, there's often a defensiveness. I found this defensiveness in myself as well. Like, why do you all need this? Like, really, you needed to make your own space? Now I'm excluded now. Why can't I go to Women's Hack or Trans Hack? Where inside of us as the majority is that defensiveness coming from, do you think?
I mean, it's really difficult to confront your own privilege and sit with being uncomfortable. I think everybody faces that to some extent or another, and especially if it's the first time that you're realizing it. I still catch myself doing it all the time, and I'm just like actively try to like read more, read books, read blogs, like read other communities' writing so that I can like understand what it's like to be not me.
I like that, to understand how it's like to be not you. Sometimes, though, I think that one can find themselves getting into a privileged kind of pecking order, you know, and it shouldn't be that way, should it? I mean, there shouldn't be like, well, I'm more privileged than you, but you're more privileged than this person. And then, you know, who's the least privileged? It's not a contest.
Yeah. Going back to your earlier question around, you know, why do we sort of feel that sense of defensiveness? I think especially when, you know, you're a member of the dominant group, you've been raised in a social structure where you feel entitled to be part of everything and go into any space and have no part of the tech community that's not immediately available to you. So I think part of it, is dealing with boundaries and dealing with, that sort of sense of entitlement that, that some groups are raised to have.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it. It's not fun to not be a part of the club and to not necessarily be, I don't say welcome isn't necessarily the word, but, you know, just not to be needed. You know, there can be women's hackathons and there's just really no reason for me to be there. And if I did go to a women's hackathon, I could get really, I could fall into, I think the term is mansplaining.
Yes.
Could you, yes. Maybe you could say, explain to the listeners what it means to be a mansplainer.
So one pattern we see a lot, and I'll talk about it specifically in technology, but you will see a lot, men in tech, explaining things to women in tech, in overly simplified, patronizing terms that make a lot of assumptions about, the woman's, skill set and that sort of, construct her as being less technical, less intelligent, less mature, less worldly. So it's basically one type of microaggression, and is a site of sort of how men sort of demonstrate their power over women, but also a way that their stereotypical perceptions of women play out in personal interactions.
Mm-hmm. What's a way for me, when I'm in an environment and I don't know where the technical levels of people are to level set, like what's the right way to phrase that? Like, okay, well, I don't really know what level you want me to come in at, but I want to basically find out how technical someone is so then I can tailor it to their level of tech, not their gender.
I would say just ask. I mean, like, hey, what's your background? What do you do? Another thing that happens a lot, in tech spaces is that people make a lot of assumptions about the roles and experience levels of women around them. So often, men will assume that women are in HR or in marketing, or something like that, instead of, you know, starting off the conversation like, hey, what do you do? Where do you work? What are you interested in? What do you hack on? Stuff like that. So I think just, getting to know the people around you, and making that the basis of how you interact rather than, stereotypes and assumptions is how you can address that.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely have found in my experience that this is a process and not a destination. Like I was in a meeting once, in New York actually recently, and it was a bunch of people from out of town. I think they were from Brazil and their English was kind of off. And I was trying to be, I was trying to recognize that their English was not necessarily there. So I brought my English down to a more simplistic level. But at the same time, it was a man and a woman. And I, even though I think of myself as someone who is aware of these issues, I still kind of instinctively gazed at the man and looked at the man and deferred to the man. When it turned out, I learned about 10 minutes into it that the man was the assistant and the woman was the vice president. And I was kicking myself in turn. I was like, oh man, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Like I kicked myself. It's like, well, where is this coming from? I was like, well, it's coming from 40 years of systems that have set me up to just assume that the big giant 6 foot tall man is probably the vice president. And it was exactly inverted. It was almost like a movie where the little tiny petite woman was the VP and the man was her assistant. And I just didn't assume that. And I was kicking myself after the fact.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's absolutely a process of, you know, continually, evaluating, you know, the systems around us, how we participate in them, how we can sort of be, better members of the community and confront our own biases and our own privilege, and just be better members of the community. And I think that's a lifelong process, for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And like a lot of the time that means owning up to something like you just said, or, you know, listening for a long time when you would normally speak, like recognizing you're in a situation where, you know, you're probably going to talk too much, or, you know, typically this is a place where people get talked over, and just listening, or, you know, checking yourself before you give a compliment and like, is this actually a compliment? Like I get complimented on the fact that I code and like,
so wait a second, you're a professional developer and they're complimenting you on that you are a coder.
Yeah. Or that it's, I've been told that it's cute a lot, which is not a compliment.
So is that an example of what you, you used a word, Shanley, you said that a microaggression. So Amelia, if I compliment you on, oh, you're a coder, oh, that's great, that's a microaggression.
It definitely is in the sense that, men, it's not considered surprising or, mold breaking or like cute or special, when men have technical abilities. But when women have technical abilities, it's like, wow, I'm surprised that you're technical. I'm going to demean your, technical abilities by calling them cute or turning it into an aspect of your personality rather than, mm-hmm. you know, your profession, and something that you've been doing for years.
Or just feeling that you're in a place that you can, you know, bestow a compliment or like approval on to this person for what they're doing.
Okay, so let me ask this, and let me kind of push a little bit, because I want to understand that I respect where you're coming from, and I think that people who are listening, they want to respect. If we assume that most people come into a personal interaction not intending to be aggressive, not intending to offend, how can we have interactions with women or trans people or disabled people or whatever without feeling like we as the dominant system are walking through a minefield? You know what I mean? Like I could see someone maybe listening to this show going, gosh, I don't know what to say anymore. Like, your shoes are awesome. Am I allowed to compliment you on your shoes? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, you know, I would characterize, that reaction by people in, especially in dominant groups, as, you know, irrelevant, mild discomfort. Like, mm-hmm. it's not too much to ask that you are considerate of, the people around you and that you try not to produce oppressive structures in the way that you communicate. Underrepresented and marginalized groups in technology face, a number of challenges, from being paid substantially less not being able to get work, being harassed on the job, in the workplace, in the mainstream tech community, having to protect themselves from online harassment, mm-hmm. Or having to experience it or go through it, and not being able to achieve, you know, or have access to a lot of the opportunities that mainstream groups have. So, you know, I find one thing that does happen, particularly with the dominant group in technology, which is white men, is that they try to turn all of these conversations into about them and about their comfort and about their discomfort or how they're feeling about it, when really that's not the relevant part of the conversation. Yeah, that's what I would say about that. It's difficult when you're trying to talk about systemic inequalities within the tech industry, mm-hmm. and, you know, you have to comfort someone so that they don't feel like a bad person, when really we all need to be doing the work and, you know, getting more educated and doing a better job.
Interesting. I think you're definitely getting to the heart of kind of like the feelings that I have around this. Like, there's feelings of helplessness. There's feelings of defensiveness. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, well, I'm thinking about all the tapes that are running through my head, right? And you just said, like, well, like, the point is not to comfort me, right? But at yeah. the same time, I need to figure out where to do, what to do with that. Like, where do I put those feelings? You know, I mean, I should, presumably I should channel them into dismantling systems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's really about moving from a narcissistic focus on individuals and towards community work and how we can start to dismantle these structures. And that ultimately getting stuck in personal guilt or, you know, introspective feelings, while it's an important part of the process, we need to be able to move past that in order to actually work on the systemic issues. So I think that's sort of the ultimate, that's part of the goal of sort of personal awakening around these issues.
I mean, a good place to start in that is, you know, like model view culture. One of the things why I think it's so important to publish is, and like what brought us to doing this is because we wanted more of those voices out there in a more mainstream tech publication so that, you know, it wasn't shocking that these perspectives of all these other people existed. And that, you know, it was something that you could read and kind of like start to mentally model and understand.
Mm-hmm. Is it appropriate for me to be, as a member of the majority, to be trying to think about ways that I can help? Like, I've noticed in the last 4 or 5 years, when I go to conferences and I'm on a panel, if the panel is only men or only white men, in the last five years I've started speaking up. I actually don't speak on panels that are only white men anymore. Is mm-hmm. is that an appropriate but, you know, albeit small thing for me to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, thinking about ways that we can use our power, our influence, you know, our skills in ways, that are useful to the community is really important. So, you know, as a speaker, at a lot of industry events, how can you advocate for more diversity? How can you make sure that, you know, you're helping underrepresented, and marginalized voices, get the exposure, that they richly deserve in the workplace? Either as an employee or as a manager, how can you help build more diverse teams? How can you help make sure that the environment is one that's healthy and conducive to their success? And even in online spaces, you know, how can you help give more attention to diverse groups and diverse issues? How can you demonstrate social consciousness to the people around you? And if you're a member of the dominant group, how can you work with other people that share your privilege on education and knowledge? Like, I think it's really important that men work with other men on sexism, and that white people work with other white people on racism and stuff like that.
So what has been the reaction since you launched the company?
Oh, it's been really great so far. Yeah, we're incredibly excited about the community response so far. A lot of people have been in touch with us, saying that, you know, they feel that, this, company really helps to address a market that's not being, addressed in the existing media. We've had tons of writers, get in touch with us about writing for the publication. One interesting, thing that we do is that we pay all of our writers. So something that tends to happen, in sort of the mainstream tech media is that people, especially, people from underrepresented and marginalized groups, are expected to produce content for free. So we want to make sure that, you know, we pay all of our authors. So that's been, incredibly exciting. And we have our launch event coming up, as well in San Francisco. And we plan on doing more community events that are sort of focused around these topics, first in the West Coast, but then expanding out.
Mm-hmm. And how is this different from, is this an online magazine? But you said specifically it's a media company. So what other things other than authorship are you providing to the community?
So we think that print media is like very important. And, so we've been selling, when we launch, we are also selling these print subscriptions. So, small books that we'll print quarterly, with exclusive content for them. And then maybe some of the best of kind of reprints added in,
like a zine, like if you remember the zine culture.
Yeah, definitely. It's super inspired by zine culture. I've especially done quite a bit of publishing of zines and literary journals in the past. And, there's just something like about actually, you know, having your community have like books and have publications. And, you know, we have a conference. We'd like to put on a conference later in the year. It's definitely part of our plans. Yeah, we're getting set up with podcast equipment, so we'll be doing a podcast shortly, and we're also hoping to do some video production as well as more news coverage like you would see from a larger and more mainstream tech publication. Mm-hmm. We also have a weekly newsletter that covers kind of like the events that have happened in the past week and in the tech world with like a somewhat of a critical eye, and then also just like what's interesting that's coming up next.
Mm-hmm. So there's the website, which is the ongoing regular content by paid authors in the community. Mm-hmm. Then there's the four, you know, kind of quarterly books, so actual physical books that you get. So if you click subscribe right now, I can go and subscribe and I'll get these quarterly zines, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. Then it sounds like you're going to build a series of events. I'll be able to go and, like you've got your launch party coming up on the 30th in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Do you anticipate that the conferences will be tech conferences that'll talk about issues of tech? Or will it be just, what will be the focus of your events?
Yeah, so we're still in development for that, but, you know, our company is very much focused on specifically, the tech community. So, as we develop conference ideas, we'll be exploring things that are sort of at the intersection of tech and social justice and diversity. So everything from software that benefits diverse communities to how software does impact our communities and other sort of things in that vein.
Mm-hmm. And of the articles that you initially launched, which ones do you think maybe like got the most coverage, or you think that are the most controversial that people got excited about?
So we had a wonderful piece by Kate Loss, who wrote, she's the author of The Boy Kings, which was a book about the early years of Facebook. And she wrote an amazing essay that looked at how surveillance on social networks has been gendered. So, for example, people looking at photos of women drives the vast majority of site activity on social networks and has for years. So she talked about this idea of the surveillance that has happened on these sites for years, but how with the revelations around the NSA surveillance, sort of the power dynamics that are there and some of the political dynamics as well.
That was a really excellent piece that she put together. She explored some of the things that the NSA were doing that were completely inappropriate uses of power.
Yeah, absolutely. And drawing parallels to how early startup employees have abused technology in similar ways. We also had a great piece that collected interviews from many professionals in the community that was advice for people from diverse backgrounds that are just getting into tech, which was really incredibly well received. And we also had some great pieces that looked at the search for the next Zuckerberg, which is a really popular sort of construct in tech in a variety of different places, as well as some stuff that looked at online harassment on the internet and in the intersection of platform features with harassing and abusing behavior. So really just a broad range of topics that are relevant to diverse communities, but also look at things from sort of a cultural and social perspective.
Yeah, you've got a pretty amazing group of authors. I know that Courtney Ziegler has got a PhD, and he is an amazing person and a great author, and put together one of those pieces as well.
Yeah, he's great.
Do you think that you'll be putting out new content kind of every week, or what's your general like, how often should I come back to Model View Culture?
So we're planning on publishing full issues every 3 weeks at this point, and then the quarterlies get published 4 times a year. But we'll also have content in between issues that look at current news and events in the community that will contain news coverage at events. We're going to be going to She's Geeky this weekend. There's another event coming up in February called Lesbians Who Tech that we'll have some coverage from. So issues will be coming out about every 3 weeks, but we're also hoping to have a steady drumbeat of other news and content.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll do apps as well, or is this something that I will just use RSS and the mailing list and then the paid subscription to access?
So far, that's the plan. I mean, I'm the only developer, so we're kind of growing as we need to, and the response to this has been really good. The site is mobile, so I don't think that we need a specific app yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like some of these things, like the article by Kate Loss, has already had upwards of thousands of hundreds of shares on Twitter, hundreds of shares on Facebook. So that basically went viral, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really share traffic numbers, but there's a huge audience.
Yeah, I'm only gleaning your traffic from looking at your number, the number of social shares. And when something's in the hundreds of shares, then you know that people are reading, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's something that's really exciting for us, is that sometimes when you look at different populations individually, this population is only X% of people in tech, this population is only X%. But when you actually add up, all the number of people in those groups and their social influence and their power in technology and their influence and their abilities, you're looking at a massive market that's really being underserved by a lot of the mainstream infrastructure. So we're incredibly excited to be, one of the organizations that is focused on that market.
Yeah, you have this idea of an organizational subscription. So, I mean, I could see where you could make money by having individual subscriptions. But as with any media company, you know that people are struggling with the idea of eyeballs. How do you think that you'll scale organizationally? Do you think that a company would buy a subscription, or large companies?
Yeah, so actually the company subscription to the quarterly, which is that you get packs of books, you can get, bigger numbers that are all shipped to you to put in your office or distribute to your employees. Several companies that, friends worked at, or just people that we talked to as we were preparing were like, actually, you need to sell them in packs. Like, it was something that was actually pretty actively requested. I think that there are some tech companies who do like take an active role, or have employees who take an active role in wanting to support this kind of media and wanting to educate themselves and make their companies better places to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited that you guys are going to get into podcasting as well and the idea of video. I'd love to hear the voices of the authors sharing after the fact, like if they break a news story, and then like what are the results of that?
Yeah, that's a great idea. We have been reading your blog post about getting into podcasting, and we got this fancy mic that you recommended. So we're looking forward to getting into that too. So I think there's, you know, tons of opportunities for media in this space. You know, we'd love to do like an art show at some point. So we have high ambitions, but it's early in the game.
Well, that's great. Well, it's exciting to have, fresh new voices, on the internet with modelviewculture.com. You've got a great lineup of authors that I assume is going to continue to expand. It sounds like people have been putting in submissions. How would someone get in contact with you if they felt that they wanted to have something to share on the site?
Yeah, so just on modelviewculture.com, there's a page for contributors, and it has all the information and that you'd need to get started, but we usually start conversations over email.
Okay, cool. So people can go to Model View Culture, they can subscribe, learn about events, learn about the authors, and then if you make sure you scroll down to the bottom, you can advertise. There's a link for contribute, and then they can follow you on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you educating me with some of the basics, and then also letting us understand your new media company, what you're trying to accomplish, and what the future is for Model View Culture. So thank you so much, Amelia Greenhall and Shanley Kane, for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.